Before we get into the episode, the following is what you should regularly expect from the Cryptographic Podcast over at lordshaper.com/cryptographic.
If you're a fan of science fiction, horror, crime noir, or dark fantasy, then you'll want to come join me at lordshaper.com/cryptographics, home of Cryptographics Podcasts. That's KRYPTOGRAPHIK. See you there, or you'll taste my whip.
This is Batman. Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. It's what it does, because I'm Batman.
Welcome to episode 40 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. It's time for the third installment of 22 Pages, and this time, well, we go 44. That's right, Nova number 1 and 2 are reviewed by Chris Chavez, Equinox on the Forums, Brent Cassina, and myself. Spoilers abound for Nova, so please beware, and enjoy. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name is Ian Levinstein, and welcome to 50 minus 10, episode 40 of Comic Timing. See, I can do mathematics every now and then. This is 22 pages number 3 for Nova number 1 and a little bit of number 2 as well. And I am joined by one guy who hasn't been on in a very, very long time, so I'll introduce him first. He is Equinox on the Forums. In real life, he's known as Chris Chavez. Chris, what's going on, man?
Hey, doing well, you guys. How's everything going on the East Coast?
Not too bad here, not too bad. Weather is nice and warm and not too humid, so I'm surviving without the fan on in my room. Which can be sweltering at times, but for now I'm safe, so that's all well. And also joining us today is Brent Cassina, Nightwing BK on the forums, the co-host without being called a co-host of Comic Time.
Well, at least I have a title now.
Yeah, you're the co-host, un-co-host, co-host.
The unco-hosted co-host.
There you go.
He's a lineman.
Exactly, exactly. You're my running back. How about that? All right, I'm the quarterback. You're the running back. That works.
I don't know what a running back does exactly.
He runs.
Oh yeah.
It's not too hard to figure that one out. But anyway, we're doing Nova number 1 here. We're doing Nova number 2 as well. So I'll do the typical Raging Bullets thingy here, and read off everybody who is all a part of it, and do a little bit of a summary, and then we'll get into the main storyline here. The cover was by Adi Granoff. I know I mispronounced that name. The writer is Dan Abnett. The pencils are by Sean Chen. The inks are by Scott Hanna. Colored by Brian Reber, I believe, and lettered by VC Corey Petit, or Pettit, depending on how the hell he pronounces that one. So, as usual, probably mispronounced everybody's names, but that's what happens when you don't actually know these people in real life. So, I apologize if I butchered any of your names. Just blame Brent. All right. Exploding from the pages of Annihilation, Nova rockets into his ongoing series. In the wake of the chaotic Annihilation wave, a desperate galaxy cries out for law and order. In the past, an army of peacekeeping centurions delivered stability, but the Nova Corps are dead and gone. Now there is only Richard Rider, the man called Nova. Leave your comments here, which a few people did, and we'll discuss them on the show. So, yeah, Nova number 1 is a post-Annihilation book. Now, I know, Chris, you didn't read Annihilation, correct?
Correct. Okay. Correct. I was caught up in the Civil War Annihilation wave, I guess.
Okay. Without reading Annihilation, what's your take on Nova?
You know what? I actually enjoyed the first issue. I thought it was a good reintroduction to the character. I'd been exposed to him in the past with, New Warriors and, kind of his own stuff or, appearances here and there. I thought they did a nice job of kind of covering the high points of Annihilation and what he went through, bringing people like me up to speed on it. So overall, I thought it was enjoyable.
Yeah, so I mean, like, one of the good things about Nova number 1 is that it's not really heavy in continuity like, some of those other crossover like type books are. I mean, all you really need to know is that this is Nova. He's a space hero. He's coming back from this big event, and now he's got his own book again, and his costume's changed a little bit from the original costume. He's got a little more spikes on it now. Chris, do you remember what the old costume looked like and compared to this? I mean, what do you think of the new look?
I think the new look really suits him. As far as him being, the lone gunman of the universe, I think it really goes a long way to building up a badass image or as badass as you can get for somebody that's, oh, I don't know, maybe yours or Brent's age.
Hey, and yet again, I'm just happy to have somebody on the show called Brent who is younger than I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, definitely, I do agree with that. And you know what, this is sort of like the evolution of, say, like, Kyle Rayner from Green Lantern to Ion. Like, mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a change on the costume, but it's still the traditional costume in a way. And, yeah. You know, this is a much more powerful Nova than the one that we were used to. Obviously, it needs to change a little bit to, you know, suit that. Brent, did you enjoy the costume? And for that matter, did you enjoy Nova number one?
I did. I didn't read Annihilation, so I'm coming in it like with the same baggage-less idea as Chris is, I guess. And I liked the costume. I looked at the old one, you know, I guess in the flashback in the number two or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, that one was kind of dated compared to what he's got now, so I'm glad with this new look.
Yeah, it's not nearly as much of a bucket head now.
Yeah. A little more sleek.
Yeah, I mean...
And alien eyes, too, I think.
Yeah,
well, reflects the alien cultures that it comes from.
Well, the eyes, I think, have to have mainly to do with the, you know, like that Nova matrix that he's got inside of him. You know, like giving him like everything, like all the power. That's probably like where that's centered. But yeah, no, I mean, it is really interesting seeing a human being with nothing but blue eyes. It's really, really freaky. I love it. Yeah, and also I read Annihilation, but of all things, I didn't read the last issue. And I'm not quite sure why the hell I did that, but I knew what was going on until that last issue. Here, with Annihilation, it was easy to figure out what happened in that last issue, at least, so I myself was not too, you know, like, lost in the whole, like, oh, Nova's here, but he was there, what the hell's happening? And I like that about this issue. It fills you in enough, and it clues me in enough to, you know, probably make me go out and buy the trade once it eventually hits into a trade and not a hardcover, and I'll, you know, be happy about that, but... Yeah, I'm not quite sure why I did that still at this point. I think it was
money. You could probably still find number 7.
Probably, yeah. Like, I'll maybe take a look at Hanley, see whether or not I can get it there. But all in all, it was a really great first issue, and issue 2 is also fantastic for other reasons. But I think we'll just touch on 1 for now and go to 2 later. What do you think of the whole World Mind? I mean, obviously, that's a new take, a new touch on Nova, as before he just was, you know, Nova. And he was, like, a rookie, similar in the aspect of, say, a Kyle Rayner. I'm going to be comparing him to Kyle a lot because it feels like this is sort of Marvel's answer to Kyle Rayner, even though he came first. And, you know, I mean, like, now he's got this, like, whole knowledge center inside of his head. I mean, how freaking cool is that? And freaky at the same time. You got somebody talking to you 24/7 there. Did you feel the World Mind was a good touch, a little on the weird side? What are you going for there? And I guess, Brent, you first.
I mean, I like it. I did make comparisons to Kyle Rayner as I was reading it, because I read Kyle Rayner's stuff when he was just the lone Green Lantern, and then after he restarted the Green Lantern Corps and stuff like that, before he became Nova, or not Nova, but Ion. See, well, confusing them already.
He had a very short period where he was known as Nova, but then Marvel sued him, and he had to change his name. So.
Exactly. So yeah, I liked the World Mind, but at some points it seemed like the writings were letting him speak too much.
Uh-huh.
Like in issue number 1, where the bugs are attacking those people, there's like a World Mind caption or whatever that takes up, like, it's almost as tall as half of the panel it's in. I don't know if that's just the text or whatever, but it just seems like he does talk a little too much. Like, I don't think he needs to scream at Richard Rider that he needs to rest every single panel.
I think,
and that's just the writer's thing.
Yeah. I mean, that was something that they could possibly work on in the future. I mean, I can see why he was telling him to rest so much, because, well, he's overexerting himself. I mean, that much is sort of apparent. He's, like, everywhere at once here.
And also, the point I got across from that, now realizing it, is that the World Mind is in the helmet or the suit or whatever, right?
Yes.
So if Richard Rider dies, so does the World Mind.
I take it maybe that wasn't inside the suit as much as it was actually inside his head. Now, how you get to that point or what have you, I don't know. Or how it got to that point, I don't know. But it almost sounded like, you know, basically he's cohabitating Richard's skull, you know, for lack of a better term.
Well, if we only do use 10% of our brains, I guess there's plenty of room in there for a extraterrestrial being.
I guess, yeah. From what I understand about it and from what I got in Annihilation, it's sort of like a symbiotic relationship going on here, where the World Mind survives because Richard Rider survives. And obviously there was nowhere else the World Mind could go when the Nova Corps was eliminated, because their home planet was pretty much decimated. It was entirely destroyed, hence Annihilation. There was nowhere else for him to go, so he merges with, from what I know, the suit. It could actually be inside of his own head, for all I know, but I guess actually, now that I think about it, did he still hear the world mine when he had his helmet off? Because I'm trying to remember whether or not
I thought he did. I thought he did.
Okay.
You mean when he got to the planet fall?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. He did.
Okay. Well, then I guess that answers that.
Because he's walking down the street, and remember, and when Diamond Head attacks him, he doesn't have his helmet on.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I guess maybe it is inside his head then, but. The circumstances behind it, though, are not exactly the circumstances you'd like to experience, like, ever, because he was on that planet when the Nova Corps got wiped out, and he literally was the only survivor. Don't ask me how he magically happened to be the only guy who survived, because right. Obviously that's just storytelling right there, I guess, but, you know, because he was the only one left, there was nowhere else for World Mind to go, so hitches a ride with Ryder here, and I guess perhaps if he rebuilds the core, then World Mind will have a place to go, other than, well, yeah. His head.
Did anybody take it that the World Mind dialogue or what have you was kind of a, I don't know if you want to call it like a creative way of bringing the thought balloons back into like a current comic?
Hmm. Well, they've been using them in Mighty Avengers lately, the thought balloons. Mm-hmm. And, they've been using them in a very different way, though, so I guess that could be, you know, a subtle way of doing it. What I thought of it more is it reminded me a lot of the relationship between, say, Captain Marvel and Rick Jones back in the day,
yeah.
Where, you know, that sort of thing where you've got two people cohabitating in the same space. So obviously,
even Firestorm, too.
Exactly, yeah, yeah, Firestorm, mm-hmm. The same sort of aspect there where, you know, because you've got these two distinct personalities going back and forth, that you have a back and forth going inside their own head. Which is going to freak a lot of people out, mind you, because, well, when you see somebody talking to themselves, it's like walking down a street in New York City and seeing somebody with a Bluetooth headset. You don't realize they have the Bluetooth headset, and you think they're talking to themselves. You're going to walk on the other side of the street. That much is true. I mean, with this guy, you've got an entire freaking being inside your head, and you're talking back and forth, screaming at it.
With no Bluetooth headset.
Exactly. With no Bluetooth headset, you're running as far away from this guy as possible, all right? Because for all you know, he could go ahead and blow something up anytime, anywhere. And he could, because he's the human rocket. Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, especially if he's still steaming from reentry.
Exactly. Oh, boy. But, yeah, I mean, like, it's an interesting plot device. It sort of does bring back the whole thought balloon thing. But it's not exactly that, because, well, for it's not his thoughts, you know? It's more conversational than anything. I mean, Brent, would you compare this to thought balloons?
I would say no, because he's speaking aloud. He's not using a thought balloon to communicate with it.
All right, so if it was internal entirely, then you would say, okay, thought balloon?
Yeah, because they would have to use thought balloons.
Right? Sure, obviously, yeah, because, well, okay, mind you, there have been times where I thought people should be using thought balloons, and they had those little, like, narration boxes that became nice and famous in, like, about 98 or so. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they could have done that, but I don't know. I've always been a fan of thought balloons. I felt like that's so much of an easier way to tell people what you're thinking than a box on the top of one of the panels.
I like the boxes better.
I don't know, Chris, are you a thought bubble or a narration box fan?
You know what? I'm actually kind of a thought bubble guy myself.
There you go. There we go. That's
but then again, I'm old. I'm old. I'm old.
Fucking school. Old schoolers.
It's appropriate. I'm on episode 40 because I'll be 40 in what, end of this June or what have you.
Oh,
so.
Cool! Happy early birthday then.
Yeah, I think I'm probably older than both of you guys put together.
No, actually, I'm 23.
Okay, close.
Yeah,
close.
So, okay. So we're close. We're 4 years older than you combined. Yeah,
you probably get to spread a few gray hairs after this because you're so
shit.
Old.
I already have gray hairs, and I'm 23. Okay. There are some like scattered gray hairs on my head. Whenever I see them, I shed a tear, and at the same time, I'm sort of happy because my father started turning gray when he was 18 years old.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
Well, I guess turning gray when you're 18 is better than going bald when you're 17.
Ooh, and I've
not
known,
that I don't have that problem, but I do know guys
in
college that
people
do.
About that. Yeah, I actually had a friend in, and again, this is completely off topic, like, where did we even go with this, but I had a friend in my camp that I used to work at when I was about 16 years old. He was a 16-year-old kid who was already starting to thin.
Ugh. And he wore a cap all the time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he never my took off that Yankee cap. All summer long, no matter how hot or cold it was cemented on his head. And when we took, and when he took it off, we'd all turn away, like, "Oh God, no!"
Yeah.
Put it back, man. Put it back. All right, but going back to that thing called comic books that we every now and then talk about on this show, the art. Sean Chen. I was a fan of his back in the day when he was working on Iron Man.
Yeah.
He was really, really good on that. Like, in fact, actually, his take of on the armor was one of my favorites to this day.
Yeah.
And here he is getting to work with, you know, a suit that's sort of similar to armor. He gets to draw Iron Man again in issue two. But his portrayal of Nova in particular is one I'm really a fan of. Because, well, his art is just so clean that I just absolutely adore it. And I hope you guys agree with me on that because, well, quite frankly, I don't know how you could dislike it. You guys fans of the Sean Chen art?
I was kind
of
okay on the first issue, but when the second issue came in, I was definitely sold on the art.
No, was it Iron Man that sold you on it, or was it just the scenario that was made?
I guess I don't know if it was the art itself, but the inking and the coloring on number two really reminded me of the same stuff in Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay.
Right now.
Uh-huh.
With, what's his name?
Garney,
yeah. Really, really reminded me of his art. And I think Scott Hanna inking him or no? Something about different.
Yeah, it's Hanna.
This Scott Hanna? See, that's why it probably reminded me. And the coloring is, like, almost the same.
Yeah.
Or the same style of coloring. So I guess that could have been it. Because I love Ron Garnier on Spider-Man right now.
Agreed, 100%. And, I mean, it is the inks and the colors that really do it for me as well. Because I've seen Sean Chen inked and colored by other people. And there have been some instances, like, say, for instance, the stuff he did on that X-Men The End that Claremont did was not anywhere near his best work. It was decent, but it just was not the Sean Chen that I had grown to, you know, appreciate so much. This is more like it.
Yeah, I think with that, the first few issues, or at least the first arc of Sean Chen on X-Men The End, I enjoyed it, but then I think as it went on, it seemed like his art was getting a little tired, maybe a little overworn.
Yeah.
It didn't nearly seem as dynamic as what was in the first issue and then the second issue for Nova. I really enjoyed the first issue overall as far as, you know, the whole art style, the art team's work on it. I don't know if maybe it was just my copy of number two, but I thought that the coloring on the first one actually was a little bit better than the second one. The colors on the second issue, at least on the one I had, seemed to be a little bit more muted than the first one. But it kind of reminded me of, you know, like you were saying, Sean Chen's work on Iron Man. I got the same energy vibe from this as I did from that.
I think you hit the nail on the head, too, when you said energy, because he nailed those space scenes. And space scenes can be very difficult to do if you're not, like, used to it. I guess perhaps X-Men The End might have been a good, like, learning point for him because there were a lot of space scenes in that. But this is almost, I mean, this is leaps and bounds beyond that, and yet there's so much action going on in every shot that you feel what's going on. You just don't see it, you feel it, which is important specifically with space stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he has a real, you know, like you say, with the energy, with the space stuff, he has a real good sense, almost like a kinetic energy, you know, a sense of movement in the panels. I mean, even like the sections where he's going through the, you know, space warp from emergency to emergency, he really builds a real good sense of urgency.
Well, just that first page on Nova number one, it's like that first panel, he's right in your face. So if it's like a movie, you're right in his face, and you can see like the camera shake, and you can almost hear like this loud guttural thrust coming from the speakers or something. And then you see what he's looking at through his head, and then the camera pulls back from what he's going through in the Stargate and stuff. I just love that first page, just looking at it now.
Yeah.
So when you guys are talking about energy and everything like that.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, though, but calling it a Stargate, even in it, I'm watching Stargate right now for the first time. I'm watching it all the way through, and all I could think of when I even heard that was, like, Teal'c in the back of my mind going, "Indeed."
Well, they call it a Stargate in here.
Yeah, I know.
First page.
I know. And that's why, like, when I read that for the first time, I'm like, okay, is that just a general term? Are they calling it because it's like one? I don't know here.
I was just listening to, not to plug anything. Well, yeah, plug it. Uncanny X-Cast. You guys listen to that?
Occasionally, yeah.
Okay.
Once in
a while. I just listened to episode 20, and what they do on all their episodes is they go through the old issues. So now they're on, like, the Claremont stuff. They did first appearance of the Starjammers, and they had a mention of a Stargate in that. So it's, like, 70s or 60s or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 70s. So it must be rooted in science fiction or science or something.
I guess so, yeah. And, I mean, if it was in Starjammers, then obviously it's showing up in a Nova comic that makes perfect sense. At least,
but just the idea of it.
Oh, sure, yeah. No, I know. It threw me for a loop. Like, you know, literally, like, today I just watched, the third episode of season 4. Because, yes, that's how far behind on Stargate I am, all right? I'm watching it as it's coming out in season 10, and I'm first watching the fourth season on DVD now. Yeah, like, it's just been, like, nonstop in my head, SG-1, so that's why it was so amusing to me. But going back to the colors a little bit, I actually was just looking, like thumbing through number 2 again, and I can sort of see where you're coming from on that, Chris. However, I think the reason why the colors might be a little different is the difference between space and Earth.
Now there's a little more Earth tones here.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, you're seeing more of the traditional comic art because, well, it's what we're used to for, say, Earth. You know, you can get away with the darker colors, the more abstract, you know, aliens and stuff like that in space as opposed to, you know, at home where we all know what Justice looks like, we all know what the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier is supposed to look like. So, you know, the colors have to sort of be, you know, similar to what we're used to.
If that's the case, I mean, you know, then hats off to them for pulling that together. I mean, it'd be real nice to see, you know, if they carry that theme over into the following issues as well, the differentiating, you know, outer space and I don't know what you would call it, the exotic nature of it as opposed to being back home on, you know, good old planet Earth.
Agreed. Yeah, and I mean, and oh my God, the shocks he went through on planet Earth. This was not the same place that Richard Rider left that long ago. That much we can certainly say, but let's talk a little bit more about number one before we get going to number two, though. Is he suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome? To me, that sort of looks like what we're going through here. I mean, one minute he's all, you know, calm and all of that, and the next minute, pardon my French, he's, die, you fuckers, everybody's got to die. And he there's no transition whatsoever from that. It's kind of a bit crazy. And to have the world mind in your head, he's exhibited some signs of this before, but he just went through a giant space war. So, of course, he's going to have some scars, but he's not letting himself heal at all.
Yeah, I mean he's real driven as far as I you know, like you say, with post traumatic stress, you know, he's I think working himself up into a frenzy and, you know, trying to use that to, I think, you know, forget what's happened to him in the past, forget what's happened to everybody around him. But then, you know, when you get that moment of calm, then even in the art, the scene where, you know, he destroys, you know, the giant bio robot or what have you. And everybody's, you know, either thanking him or saying, you know, what exactly have you done? And he's got a look on his face kind of like, oh, God, you know, I'm so tired. It looks like he's just so alone. And then all of a sudden he kind of snaps out of it. And he's like, you know, got to go. Got to get work done. Got to, you know, take care of the next person. Can't slow down, type of thing. So,
yeah, definitely. Brett, I mean, do you feel he's going through post-traumatic stress or do you feel it's just like all part of the job?
I think it's a little bit of both, actually. Being the only person left, he's like, I think he feels obligated to go through all this backlog of calls. And I think when he goes to that space station and everybody's been dead for like 6 months,
He
realized like what he still has left to do. But that's where I got lost, is that, like, you know, he realizes what he has left to do, but then he goes home. So I guess he's like at the point where, well, if it's urgent and immediate, like happening right now, then I'll go do it. But I guess, I don't know, it doesn't really say, like, if he went through the rest of the backlogs and they were all older ones or anything like that.
Well, I mean,
I don't know, that's just a story point that I got confused at.
Well, he went home because he kind of had to. I mean, you know, with World Mind nagging at him the way he did, you know, you need some rest, you need some rest, you need some rest. Well, what better place to get some rest than to go home? Even if there were this much backlog going on, he is only one person.
Yeah. He's not really like a godlike being like Ion was, too.
Oh, yeah, well, And again, Ion, I mean, don't even get me started on Ion, because I felt they might have even gotten a little bit too over the top with Ion the first time around. This new Ion is perfectly fine. I like his powers a lot more than I like the omnipotent being that the original Ion was. But this Nova can do a lot, but he can't do everything. Because if he could, well, then he would be one of the Eternals or something like that, that literally could just do anything with the like drop of a hat. But that's not his character.
I mean, as far as him, you know, trying to be a, I don't know what you call it, one-man army corps, one-man, you know, police force or what have you.
Mm-hmm. He's a nomad.
He's got a much better uniform.
Yeah, there you go. Without the fin. So instead of fin head, it's bucket head.
Exactly.
I'm kind of wondering, you know, as far as with the writing team, I don't know if this writing team will kind of broach how he's trying to move from his role as the soul protector to trying to bring everybody else in, how they'll kind of balance it out. Will they focus on, you know, him just trying to take care of everything on his own, maybe because he doesn't feel like he can trust anybody else to do it, or he doesn't want to put anybody else in that position, or, you know, are they going to try and bring back the Nova Corps with him as the leader? You know, I have no idea. I just think they've, you know, with the issue number one, they put a lot of maybe not like referencing directly, but kind of putting out some seeds for some from future storylines that they could build and follow.
And that's an important thing here, because, well, not to spoil anything. Okay, well, to spoil a little bit, I guess. The solicits for, I believe it was issue 5, have a female Nova on the cover. So it looks like there's at least one other survivor out there, but we don't know whether or not yet this is just a person that he's bringing on, whether or not this is a survivor from when the planet exploded. You know, obviously we're going to have to wait and see. I kind of do not really see him going through the motions of putting the Nova Corps back together so soon in the series, because mm-hmm. he sort of has to root himself a little bit first before he can go out mm-hmm. and start doing that. But say, mm-hmm. perhaps by issue 12, issue 13, if it's still going on, well, that's something I could see happening.
And seeing the other thing that they kind of bring in, and I hate to have to reference, you know, the next issue, because I know we're wanting to try and focus on the first one.
Yeah.
But the world mind, you know, if it's sitting inside of his head, if Richard's not making the decisions that the world mind thinks it's in its best interest, will it kind of try and take the horse by the reins and get things going the way it thinks it should, as opposed to the way that Richard wants to get things done?
That's a good point, actually. I mean, we don't really know how much control World Mind has over him, because, well, mm-hmm. again, referencing the next issue, I mean, we did have that moment where he took over his bodily functions when Richard was sleeping. We could very well have World Mind going out on missions when Richard Rider is not even aware of it, which would be mm-hmm. really freaky, and at the same time is very well possible.
Well, and plus, and even in issue number one, I mean, you know, again, it's probably something that I only really saw after reading the second issue, but in one of the sections kind of midway through the issue, the world mind keeps, I shouldn't say pushing him or telling him he's got to do this, you know, you have to, but he's the world mind's basically telling him, you know what, you're going too hard, you need to rest, you need to kind of take it easy for a little while. Well, in looking at the following issue, we can kind of see that, well, the world mind is kind of in the driver's seat when he is resting.
Yeah.
So is that something that it's trying to do, kind of saying, oh, you know what, why don't you, you know, take it easy, you know, stay off your feet for a little while, I'll kind of handle things for you.
Go out and get drunk, take a couple sleeping pills, you know, do what it takes so that you're out for at least 5 or 6 months, and, you know, come on back, and you'll be good as
make
new.
Make some stupid decisions.
You just never know what will happen when you get those celestial databases handing out some Rohypnol. Baby, I love you, man. It's okay.
Hey, you know, there's only one thing I want to say to you, World Mind, and that is, you're in my head.
Well, you're not my baby, you're World Mind's baby.
Oh.
Who's that? He lives inside my head.
Oh, crap. I'm having the baby of a crazy man.
Mommy, Daddy's weird.
All right, before we go entirely off the reins here, Brent, I mean, do you feel he has ulterior motives, or do you feel he's sincere about the rest?
Well, I thought it was sincere until Chris brought it up just now, so I guess not. Not to give you the short answer or anything.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well,
but yeah, oh, I mean, the first issue seemed kind of like he actually cared, but maybe it's this self-preservation thing again. You know, he is Richard Rider now. The World Mind is Richard Rider, and Richard Rider is the World Mind.
We are Legion.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Well, how long do you see Richard going before he starts to get the Nova Corps back together?
I don't know. They just started his series, and it seems like they're trying to start him off as the Sola Nova person. Ranger, Nova Ranger, what are they called? Nova Policeman?
Like Nova Rangers, that's pretty much it.
Okay. It seems like they're trying to start him off as that, so maybe he won't start it until maybe like issue 30 or something, if it goes that long. Mm-hmm. You know? Because if they did want him to restart the Corps, I thought they would have done it in the first or second issue.
Okay.
As that being his purpose, not saving everybody all at once like he was trying to do.
So you do see him going the whole Kyle route for a while and just being the sole guy.
Yeah. I mean, why else would they give him so much power and annihilate the entire Nova Corps in the first place?
True.
If they're going to rebuild it right after that.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, and another thing about Nova is that, from what I know about the character, and again, I didn't read much of his early stuff, so I can't really tell you that much about that, but we really only saw Nova on Earth before. And this gives an entirely new aspect to the character, where he's probably going to be constantly off-world. I mean, this upcoming series that we're seeing with him, you know, say, like, issue 3, 4, and all that, chances are after issue 4 or something like that, we're not really going to see him that much on Earth. Because, well, yeah, he is going to be everywhere at once.
Well, isn't the second Annihilation starting up or something?
There's going to be something involving Annihilation. I don't know if it's technically the second Annihilation, but from what I've heard, Nova's not going to be in that.
He's
not. Is that the stuff they're soliciting, or they kind of have some previous stuff out with Star-Lord? Or the new Star-Lord?
Yeah, the new Star-Lord, the new Quasar. I believe
some raccoon.
A Rocket Raccoon, yeah. Rocket Raccoon. Talk about a character there that I never thought I'd see outside of Peter Porker. All right? And again, I'm sort of happy they brought him back because, well, he's like, say, like the Gnort of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
He's like that animal character that you never, that, like, you want to see as much as possible of because they always do such ridiculous things with him. They seem to be, you know, making a serious character out of him again, and, well, by all means, go ahead and do so. But the second Annihilation, from what I've seen so far, is not going to have any of the cast from the original in it. So Silver Surfer and, Super Skrull and Nova and all those guys are probably going to be off doing their own thing and not associated with the second wave going on.
Well, Silver Surfer's not going to be in it, then who's going to get the whining done in this one?
Quasar. Yeah. That's always been Quasar's job. Even if it is a new Quasar, I'm sure he'll be able to pick up the whining perfectly fine.
But see, that would be the thing that would turn me off to this book.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get issue 3. Because I want to see the fight between Penance and Nova. I did that just for you, Ian.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
But if he goes into the Annihilation stuff, I'm not going to get it. I'll drop it right away.
Really?
Because I didn't read the first one, and I don't have any interest in reading the second one before I've, you know, read the first one to begin with.
Well, that's another reason why I don't really see them going into Annihilation is because, well, just like you said, there's going to be people who didn't read the first one.
And it seems too soon. To tell you the truth, it seems too soon for them to have a second one just after the first one ended.
Yeah, see,
but I guess they want to make money.
I could see him going into another Annihilation, and I'm kind of surprised, or I don't know, not really disappointed, but I'm actually kind of surprised that, you know, they spent all the time tearing down the Nova Corps and putting him through Annihilation and, you know, putting him into his new place as one of Marvel's galactic or universe protectors or what have you. But then, you know, at the end of the first issue, they've already got him back on Earth. Now, I can see where Marvel would be doing it because they want to tie him into the whole Civil War and the Initiative and what have you. Hell, they want to put another banner on the top of one of their books. I don't know. Personally, I thought they should have waited until maybe like 5 or 6 at the earliest to bring him back home.
But yeah, for me, though, like, that's what grabbed me, and it was issue 2 to make me read another issue. Whereas if issue 2 was just another space issue, then I wouldn't be getting number 3. But I think because they went into that in issue two, it's going to make more people who just jumped on to give it a try. Uh-huh. Maybe all the Comic Timing listeners that didn't read Annihilation, maybe it'll try and get them to down for 4 and 5.
Yeah.
Okay. Whereas if it wasn't just another space issue, I would have been disinterested. Because then I really would have been making the Kyle Rayner comparisons and just said, well, I already read this story in another company. Screw it.
Okay.
And it was the 90s, and stuff happened.
Yeah.
Well, also another thing that we can definitely say about Nova is that he's a much better outfit than the original outfit that Kyle wore.
Oh, you didn't like that mask?
I did. I just love making fun of it, all right?
Mr. Kyle Rayner from my icon?
Yes,
yeah,
exactly. That's why I'm making fun of it, all right? Because
that
I love it so much.
That outfit was bad.
Well, no, I'm only saying that because of how many people actually do make fun of that, all right? I actually enjoyed it a great deal, all right? All right? Ruin my joke. Go ahead and say it.
Sound like Tarantino. All right.
And by the way, for anybody who gets the Yes Network in New York, all right, I'm going to make a nice thing, like off-segue thing here about Tarantino. If you haven't had a chance to watch Michael Caine's Center Stage with Tarantino, watch it. It was absolutely fantastic. You learn stuff about Tarantino you didn't know before, and he gives a little insight into his movies. So go ahead and watch that if you get a chance on Yes Network. We now return to Comic Timing, already in progress. Hey. Yeah. The cliffhanger at the end of issue one, going with the idea that that Brent actually said, yeah, that is why I came back for issue two, because, well, this is what's happening in the Marvel Universe right now. Civil War just happened. You know, the world is in disarray still. Well, mostly the United States, but the rest of the world is suffering as well. And, well, you've got this guy basically rocketing in from space. And, well, what's going to happen? Of course, Tony Stark is going to be alert to it because, well, Tony Stark is the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. now. That's the world that we are living in right now. Had, say, for example, Richard Rider come back to Earth and nothing would have happened involving these people, well, that I would have felt ripped off. I mean, I don't know if you guys, you know, feel the same way about that. I'm happy with that it happened in issue one and issue two like this because it gave me a reason to think, hey, this Nova series is going to mean something because we're going to get a new perspective on the Civil War universe, post-Civil War.
Yeah, I mean, I can see where, you know, with Nova. See, the whole thing with him interacting with Civil War is, I think, you know, you've got, you know, your Tony Stark and what have you that is basically looking at everybody, you know, at any hero that he can find or any hero that he comes across as being, oh, God, you know, we got to get him on our team. You know, it's the right thing to do, you know, blah, blah, blah. Whereas you've got Nova who's thinking, well, you know, if I give up my information to you, you know, I've already got everybody that's harshing on my family. If I give you more information, if I register, well, then what, you want me to just stay down here? I'm supposed to be somebody that's out there protecting the entire universe. So
yeah,
he might do it just as a token. To say, oh, okay, well, I'm agreeing or what have you, but it's not like he's going to be there and be, you know, kind of like one of those PR people like Tony Stark would want him to be.
Sure, yeah. Well, and again, it's going to kind of be a bit hard for him to do that considering that he's an ex-New Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his entire team got absolutely decimated at the beginning of Civil War. Justice is really the only one there who's really trying to corral him into the quote-unquote good guy side of, you know, post-Civil War, because, well, Justice realized that, you know, if he were to continue to be on Cap's side, well, then he might very well end up like his friends. But Nova, not being there when it happened, will probably have a bit of a different take on things than Justice had, you know, living through it the way Justice did.
Yeah.
I mean, well, reading that issue, I was kind of surprised that Richard Rider didn't say, you idiot, don't you realize I'm above you? Uh-huh. Basically, I'm the police force for the entire universe, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who are you to say that I have to do anything that you say?
He's Iron Man, and Iron
just
Man
because, is just a because douche. I'm from the same planet.
Iron douche?
Yes.
No, but he wasn't written like a douche here. This
yeah,
book
yeah.
And Iron Man, he's not a douche.
Yes.
It was just in Civil War frontline in this one.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes, yes.
Can we just stop calling him a douche?
I really like
Iron Man.
I know that you're very pro Iron Man, all right? It's just going to take a while for me to get used to it, okay?
I was pro Reg.
Oh,
I like this idea.
Oh, boy.
I might be the only one out there, but I was pro Reg.
You make
I
Captain
like
America's
my hero,
skeleton cry.
I like my heroes loose and wild.
Just like you like your women.
Slap it in the wind. Burn the bras. Let them hang.
Oh, boy. We are going down a path that I don't think any podcast ever wants to go down. Unless, of course, it's about sex, which is what not what we're really about. So let's corral things back a little bit. How
there
about
you go.
That? Yeah, there we go. That's super there. He is sort of the Galactic Police and all that, but will Iron Man... And again, this isn't saying anything about bad about Iron Man, right? Tony Stark feels that he has authority over anybody who is from Earth. Richard Rider is from Earth, no matter which way you put it. So that's why he would probably want to try and corral him in.
Do you think that they're all... That, and the writers, do you think that they're also going to, at least in this situation with Richard and Tony, play up the whole age thing as far as Tony going, well, you know, I'm older and I've been doing this longer and, you know, you should kind of look up to what I'm telling you and respect it because I am your elder after all. And, you know, you basically put Richard in a position of, well, yeah, maybe he does know more than I do because he's older. Do you think that might be kind of the way that they're going, or do you think that might maybe not serve the story well?
I don't think it would serve it.
Have him be the Obi-Wan to his Anakin, as it were.
Yeah, something like that.
I could see him perhaps giving him some advice, but I don't really see him going the route of, say, Peter Parker was to him at the beginning of Civil War. I mean, I don't know if we're going to go that far, but you probably might have at least a little bit of advice being spewed out of Tony.
A little bit, but I don't think Richard, or at least from these two issues, would really listen to him. I mean, okay, maybe up until Annihilation, they were on the same level, being heroes on Earth and stuff, and dealing with the same level of threats, maybe a little less for the New Warriors and stuff. But I think now that Richard has gone out to space and basically stopped the Annihilation wave, I mean, he says he pulled Annihilus inside out, I think he's kind of on another level separate from Tony. So how does Tony's advice on supervillains correlate to galactic menaces? You know?
Well, I mean, Tony was a part of, you know, galactic wars before. I mean, he was there for the Kree-Skrull War, and, I mean, he was there for, again, this isn't nearly as big a scale, but he was there for, you know, like, Onslaught, and, I mean, he was there for a lot of other, you know, at least space-driven things that, well, even the Secret War he was there for. That, you know, that he has had experience with that sort of thing before, so he would probably be able to at least give a few hints on how to deal with, you know, post-traumatic stress from a situation like that, because, well, I guess somebody who has survived alcoholism would probably be a best person to turn to in a situation like that. You know, somebody who's gotten his feelings and his personality back under control after going off the wheel, as it were.
Yeah, I can see that.
Now, I mean, whether or not he actually does do that is to be seen, but, well, it's certainly something that you probably could get out of Tony if you do want to get it out of him. Do you see perhaps Nova turning to the anti-Red side and getting with, you know, or at least trying to meet with the guys who are living at Dr. Strange's mansion?
I don't know. I kind of am curious to see how things go, again, looking forward to issue two, to how things kind of play out with the Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
Because I think that he's getting one side of things right now from Tony and from Justice. But then, you know, even though you've got the Thunderbolts that are, you know, supposedly on the side of the Initiative, just in case anybody hasn't read it, I don't want to spoil it for everybody, but there's, you know, at least one character on there in particular that has been through a lot that I think it would be real interesting to see how Nova reacts to how Civil War affected that person and whether he sees it as being a good thing or not.
I probably would not react well when I find out that one of my best friends is now wearing a Cuisinart.
An Iron Maiden? They should have called him Iron Maiden.
Yeah. Oh, God. And seriously, though, how do you react to that? I mean, a guy who used to be fun-loving and friendly and, you know, a guy you could turn to in the clutch to lighten you up and cheer you up.
I'd be disgusted by it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm sure he will be.
Yeah?
Especially after, like, 6 short months, you know? Or, like, 3 months or however long he was gone.
It's been about 6 months, yeah.
Yeah.
which, you know, again, says the sliding scale of Marvel, it's apparently only been a couple of, quote-unquote, couple of weeks since the new Avengers first got together in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'd love to that.
Yeah. Right. So is a couple sure. of weeks, like 12 weeks or 16 weeks or 503 weeks? It's 3 weeks. Yeah, 3 weeks. In a three-week time.
117.
There you
In
go.
In a three-week time, we had 25 issues. Can you believe it?
Yeah, that sounds about right. 25 days. 25 issues, 25 days. Perfect. Print it. Beautiful. Oh, man. To go with the idea of somebody who's surviving post-traumatic stress like I feel Nova is, to go to the opposite side of the spectrum and somebody who basically gave into his post-traumatic stress, you might actually kind of see Nova trying to get his friend back and realizing that it ain't going to happen. And where do you go from there?
Hell, if I was him, it would be a perfect way for him to get back off the planet again because, you know, he's seen what's happening to all of his friends, and if nothing else, if he knows he can't change them, because you know he has to respect, I guess, the decisions as they were of everybody else. His choice is either to stay around and live with it or deal with it, or leave and go do his own thing.
Well, it's like moving into a new planet. If he wants to do that, you know, you have to abide by their laws. You weren't around to create them or shape them, so you have to live with them or just leave, basically.
That's true, actually. I mean, like, the Earth he left is not the Earth he's at now.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah. You know, even though it's his home, this is not his home anymore. I mean, even his own family is freaking frightened as hell about him. He has no home anymore because, well, his family, again, is not really that accepting of him. His friends are gone, except for Justice. Where do you go? You go out in space, and you fall into that World Mind didn't want him to do, and just get completely engulfed with his work. I can see that happening. Until he finds, like, perhaps people that he might be able to actually associate with, but who knows how long that's
rock bottom.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's damn close to it already, but he's not at penance level.
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to know, in Thunderbolts, you're reading it, right, Chris?
Yes.
Ian, are you reading it?
I'm reading it, yeah.
Okay, maybe a spoiler alert, because I want to talk penance.
Okay.
Is he being written at all in that book, or is he just like a character with no talking or anything?
Okay, let me give you
a mystery still.
Let me give you an example here, okay? This one will probably give you a perfect idea of how penance is right now, okay? Norman Osborn is in Thunderbolts. That much, I'm sure, most people have gathered at this point. Norman goes to Penance and says, people are starting to get a bit freaked out by you. You might want to take the suit off. He turns to Norman Osborn, okay? Norman Osborn he turns to and goes, if I could, I'd keep it on all the time.
So I'm guessing they're not going to have a heart-to-heart next issue like Iron Man and Nova did face-to-face.
Penance at one point actually said, I want you to hurt me.
God.
Guess I know what I'm expecting next issue then.
I wish I was making this up, but I ain't.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And again, based on, you know, like everybody's seen so far, you know, Nova's a, well, time off planet, stranger in a strange land. He's going to see somebody that he remembers one way, but now it you know, gets thrown up in his face that, hey, this is not the person you thought you knew.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That much you can tell also because the Nova that we knew was a very fun, friendly, still sort of new at this guy. And this is not the Nova that we have anymore because, well, obviously, I mean, he's been through the war and all that. But, for example, there were maybe five quips in all of the first issue. He used to be a Spider-Man type. You know, he used to throw around the jokes like anybody. And now it seems more like a self-defense mechanism than anything. You know, when he's in a really, really big jam, he might, you know, come out with like one small thing. But that's really it. Do you guys miss the humor at all from Nova, or do you like him the way he is now?
I can understand the way he is right now. I do miss a little bit of the humor, but to me, the character the way he is right now seems a lot like, you know, Spider-Man was when he went through his own personal tragedies, you know, whether it was Captain Stacy or Gwen Stacy, anybody else that he cared about that he loved or, you know, was real close to him or what have you. You know, like you say, the humor became more of a defense mechanism.
Uh-huh.
So that he basically, you know, wouldn't break down in front of everybody else. And, you know, he eventually worked through it, but it seemed natural. It seemed more real.
I don't know, Brent. Well, you don't really know much about Nova from the past, I know that, but would you rather have a book with humor than, say, angst?
I kind of like the way it is now.
Okay. Well, that's nice and simple there, I guess. But see, I was reading Nova. I mostly read Nova through New Warriors, and, well, Zeb Wells who wrote the reality show New Warriors before, obviously, Civil War and all that? I'm trying to remember. Nova was in that series, and mm-hmm. he, you know, was fun-loving and, you know, along with the whole reality show thing. He always seemed like he was, you know, okay with it. And then now in the most recent thing here, he made it seem like that he felt the New Warriors were like a joke. Because of going into the whole reality show thing. Now, I don't know whether or not that this is just the fact that, you know, he's looking back on things now and seeing it, or whether or not this is just a completely different interpretation of the character, but it kind of seemed to go a little bit out of left field there, because, again, he was a part of the New Warriors during the whole reality show thing, and then he went off into space.
Yeah.
So is this just a different writer's interpretation? Is this just, you know, how he feels now? I can't really tell at this point. It's going to be hard to tell as well, because, well, so much has changed in his life, as it were. So,
yeah.
Let's actually let's wrap up one and go on to two here. With one, there's one other thing I wanted to ask about space in general. Are there any villains that you yourself want to see him come across at some point that are, you know, favorite space villains of yours from the past?
He just took on quite a few of them in Annihilation, so.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a...
Because you have Thanos already. I mean, Thanos he already dealt with. So
Thanos and Annihilus and I don't know. It almost seems like, you know, maybe he'll have to come across and have some more major dealings, you know, or what have you with, like, let's say Galactus.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, God, I don't know. Nobody really strikes me offhand. But then again, that could be kind of part of the reason why they've made such a big push with the interstellar characters with Annihilation and now with Nova is to bring those characters back to the forefront, bring everybody back into play.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know, Brent, is there anybody in particular that you're looking forward to?
No.
Well, that kind of answers that. Okay, there you go. Brent Cassino, ladies and gentlemen. The thoughts that come out of this guy's head sometimes are absolutely fantastic, I gotta say. No characters whatsoever. You're a blank slate.
Don't read Marvel Galactic stuff.
Oh.
Sorry.
Well, are there any DC characters you want to see him face? I mean, are there any indie characters? Anything like that? Anybody? Just name somebody.
The new Sinestro Corps.
There you go. All right. Okay. All right. Fine. We'll have a crossover between the Sinestro Corps and Nova. It'll be absolutely fantastic. It'll happen in our heads. All right. If there's one guy I want to see him face, actually, and again, spoilers on this, have you guys been reading Uncanny X-Men?
Yeah.
Okay. Brent, have you?
Can you guess?
I guess the answer to that would be a big fat no. All right, then. Well, do you mind if I spoil things a bit, chum?
No, I don't.
Okay, good. And I can't believe I just called you chum.
I can't either.
I guess I've been reading too much Silver Age Batman. I don't know. At the end of the most recent Uncanny X-Men, Vulcan, the third Summers brother, is pretty much the head of the Shi'ar Empire. That would be a great person for him to face at this point, because, well, he's from Earth. However, now he's a space hero. He could have him meet up with the new Starjammers, which include Havoc, Marvel Girl, and Polaris.
What?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
You've been missing a lot, boy. You gotta catch up, seriously, because this has been really, really good stuff. Ed Brubaker's probably written the best Uncanny X-Men that I've read in forever. So
I heard it wasn't that good.
Hardcover. Hardcover. Pick up the hardcover.
The first three or four issues were kind of slow, and then from there it picked up perfectly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, it got so much better as time went on. Even if Marvel Girl did fall over the black-haired cloud from Final Fantasy VII, it was still really, really good.
Thank you.
I mean, come on. He's got the cloud sword, all right? He's got the giant freaking hair. I mean, he's a Shi'ar cloud. He's Shard.
Yeah.
Now, other than that, though, it was really, really good stuff. So I would love to see him have a team up with the Starjammers against the Shi'ar. That'd be really awesome.
So the Shi'ar are evil now?
Well, they're not technically evil. However, the Imperial Guard has to listen to the commands of their emperor, and their emperor is currently an evil bastard.
So they're not evil, they're just misunderstood.
Exactly. Chris, do you want to see, perhaps, the quote-unquote crossover between the Starjammers and Nova?
Yes.
Good.
I would do that.
Good.
I would do that.
Because, again, Vulcan, even if he's not exactly the most continuity-thriving person out there, he is a badass, so.
Yeah. And Annihilation pretty much took out the other two, you know, quote-unquote big races, took huge chunks out of the Skrull and the Kree.
Yeah.
So the Shi'ar, they're basically, Shi'ar.
Either way.
They're basically, you know, for lack of a better term, in the driver's seat now.
That's true. Well, all this does is this leaves the entire outer space wide open for Apophis to take over. Again, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for all the Stargate references. All right? I'll never again, I swear. But all right, let's move on to issue two. Very, very different issue here, okay? Because, you know, from the calamity that was that first issue, now we're back on Earth. But again, this is a very different Earth. All Richard Ryer had to go with before arriving on Earth were a couple of news snippets that said that there was a Civil War thing going on. He didn't know how it started. He didn't know what was going on. Only to find out that most of his friends are kaput. How do you react if you're Richard Ryder? I mean, are you nearly as calm about it as he was, or do you go absolutely apeshit?
Jeez.
I mean, it's kind of hard. I mean, honest opinion here, okay? How would you yourself react if you found out that your friends were the cause of a great tragedy?
I'm not sure he has the whole story yet.
He has most of it, though. I mean, he knows that the New Warriors were there and basically caused the Stanford incident. Accidentally.
I don't know. That's all his dad told him. I'm still not sure he has all of the facts and the details.
Well, he does know that they're dead, though. So.
He has everybody else's spin on what happened.
He was told that they're dead, and then Iron Man and Justice showed up and gave him their spin. He doesn't have the anti-Reg spin yet. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he knows all the stuff that happened with the war and Thor being a clone and Bill Foster getting killed.
He doesn't have to know
I don't
that.
Know if he knew him.
He really doesn't have to know about the clone of Thor because I'd rather not even think about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know,
but
Captain Marvel's
back
now.
He put the world mind on trying to find out what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, he got interrupted along the way, but it's not like he doesn't want to know. He's trying to get back up to speed.
Well, and plus, actually,
he probably won't know unless, you know, until the Marvel Comics version of Marvel Comics comes out with its own Civil War series by Steve McNiven version, and Marvel Comics is Steve McNiven, whatever.
Now you are just
like
really
6 months
my
late.
Head.
Well, you know how much She-Hulk they had at the Marvel Comics
yes,
of actual events?
Yes, I remember.
He's waiting on those. He's going to have to wait like a good long year.
Oh, jeez.
Well, this is actually reminding me of the Marvel comics that actually do happen in the Marvel universe that Mark Miller wrote back in the day, and a couple of those where they had, like, the X-Men as, like, agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Colonel America was their guide, as it were, and it was one of the first Marvel comics that Mark Miller ever wrote, and he took a lot of the ideas from that into the Ultimates. That's exactly where that comes from there. Yeah, I mean, it is sort of interesting to think about there, but one of my things that I'm wondering about, though, is what's going to happen when he runs into Captain Marvel? You know, because, I mean, this is another space guy that, well, obviously knows a lot about being a protector of the galaxy, as it were, because he sort of did do a lot of that when he was Captain Marvel, but he's, you know, shunned by his race of Kree. If Nova decides not to go pro-Reg, well, then he's probably going to be in the exact same scenario that Captain Marvel once was, shunned by his entire society. So he might have a lot to relate to there.
I just hope they don't bring them together. I still have a bad taste in my mouth over the whole Captain Marvel thing.
You're not the only one.
It's about the entire comic reading audience, sir.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that you literally have to say that Captain Marvel's back, but not really. He's still dead, but he's alive. But
he's never dead. We just brought him back from a time he wasn't dead. There you go.
Yeah. No, he died. He died. This is just his younger self. Yeah.
We're not going to undo it.
And Ben Reilly was the clone.
Yeah. I could see where they would relate to one another, but I still think they're going to have him go along his own, I think, path of discovery and kind of find out where everything lies at, you know, where all the cards fall as far as the new world order for the Marvel universe. I don't know. Maybe it's even predicting that he's going to feel so out of place that, you know, like we were talking about earlier, his best decision is just, you know, leave, let everybody else deal with what's going on, and he's going to go make his own way through the universe.
True. Do you feel he does need guidance, though?
Yeah, but then, you know, you never know. We've got World Mind.
Yeah, but the World Mind is the World Mind. I mean, he doesn't exactly have that human, or at least, you know, living on Earth touch that other people would have. You know, I mean, like, he'd probably relate a lot more to people from his own hometown, as it were, than a living computer in his head.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Brent?
I don't know. I'm still trying to think about how Iron Man could get him to register. Wouldn't he have, like, some sort of weird intergalactic diplomatic immunity?
You would think so, but yet again, I go to the fact that it seems like everybody on Earth who has powers is pretty much eventually going to be Iron Man's bitch.
I see, that's what I want to see out of the series is him, or them explore that, I guess in a panel or something, say, well, you know, he's not really a superhero, he's a member of an intergalactic police force who now consists of one person who really makes him like a diplomat, or I don't know.
Yeah.
But he'd be a really cool member of the Mighty Avengers. And you know that's what he's thinking in his head. I mean, like, he
just
wants to have
my train of thought.
Well, I mean, but still, though, I mean, hear me out here with the fact that you know that Tony wants the heavy hitters on his main squad, or at least, you know, to train people. And, well, what better replacement for, say, like a Thor type than Nova?
But I don't think Richard Rider's just going to outright ignore everything else in the universe.
Oh, of course. Of course. But Tony Stark doesn't know that.
Yeah. Tony Stark has his own agenda. He wants Nova in a place where he can get the most, well, whether it's PR or, you know, superhero muscle, most bang for his buck. He's always been the forward thinker, and, you know, to him, kind of like he presented to Nova, well, you know, if we get a member of the New Warriors that's working for the initiative, you know, that's going to be a big coup and go a long way to erasing the bad memories that Stanford put into everybody's head.
Yeah, I mean, Justice is already doing that, but obviously having one more member would certainly help. His parents, do you feel they overreacted? In this issue, you pretty much get a mother that is cautiously afraid of her son, and a father who seems to be more, I don't know, I guess more interested in what his friends did than the fact that his son is back. Once the whole thing happens with the World Mind, where World Mind takes over, is watching and all that, watching TV, and his father freaks out, that's another thing. But even before that, he seemed to not even be treating his son like his son anymore, just like a visitor in his house. Is this the way that you act when your son comes back after such a long time? I mean, Chris, did you feel that this was over the top at all from his parents' reaction?
A little bit. It, to me, it almost seemed a little bit like both the parents were being put into a position where, you know, mom was not against registration, but it almost seemed like you had two sides of the Civil War argument being represented by the parents. One where it's like, oh, you know, it's just a bunch of kids, and the other side was like, well, how could you call it a bunch of kids? Don't you see all the deaths that they caused?
Yeah.
To me, that interplay between the two of them, it did work within the story. But I think I would have liked to have seen it with a couple of other characters rather than just his parents, because having the parents in that role seemed to be a little forced. I almost would have preferred to see them kind of more on a unified front where, I don't know, whether they were angry at the fact that he was gone for so long, or, you know, that they just had been together for so long that they kind of had more similar views.
Brett, what do you feel on that?
I didn't think it was over the top. I looked at it as, like, his mother was always his supporter in this, and that maybe his father disliked the idea of him being a superhero in the first place. So that dislike kind of distanced him from his son while he was on Earth. And then he goes away, and then all of his son's friends blow up a town or whatever and start this whole big thing. So maybe that's what angered his father even more and, like, made him even more angry at his son for being a superhero. You know, like, some things you just can't bury or whatever.
Sure, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, He's not mad at his son. He's mad at the fact that his son was a superhero, and he thinks.
Do you think
he's
embarrassed by
menace.
It?
It could
do you
be
think
that
he's kind of embarrassed by the attention that his son kind of draws to the family, and you know, I could also see it where he's maybe being a protective of the family that's, you know, not a superhero, not superpowered being or what have you, the normal people that are, have been threatened and harassed by everybody else.
Yeah, and well, like, now he seems just completely unrelatable. He's been to space. He's a different... To me, Nova now is a completely different hero than he was before, if he was never in space before this, right? Mm-hmm. Or very rarely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was in space occasionally, but that was only mainly for, like, the really huge events, but eventually after that, he was back down on Earth.
Right. But now it seems like he's going to take a primary space role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it seems like he's almost a different hero, and that makes him completely unrelatable to his parents, because you can't really tell your parents about all the Annihilation Wave and a Zendarian world mind and all the Kree-Skrull War and whatnot, you know?
Yeah, but I mean...
They're not going to comprehend that. They've never seen these people. It's just going to be like science fiction, bad science fiction movies to them.
But do they...
How are they going
to
care?
Do they really need to be able to relate to that? I mean, he's still their son.
If you're taking that argument that he's still their son, they're going to want to know what he's been up to and what he does exactly.
I guess.
I mean, you know, him saying, oh, I save worlds from aliens, from other aliens, is not really going to fill that caring void,
what?
You know?
I mean,
when you come home from school and your mom asks you, how was your school day? You can't just say, fine. You have to explain it and go through it step by step sometimes. You know what I mean? And I think that's for any parent.
I saved you and many others from giant bugs. How about that?
But that's a one-word sentence.
Yes.
My dad gets mad at my little brother all the time for him giving the one-word, one-sentence answers. It was fine. It was cool.
But do you think that, I mean, that maybe a better analogy, you know, one that we're able to relate to would be maybe like a young soldier would have you that comes back from the Gulf War, comes back, you know, here to his family, and the family, even though they love them and support them and what have you, you've got, you know, this guy or this gal that comes home, and they've been through so much shit, and, you know, they've seen people die around them, and how does that person relate all those experiences to everybody that's back here that, you know, the worst things they're worried about is, you know, oh, hell, did I pay my gas credit card this month? And, you know, oh, I ran out of milk. Oh, I got to go to the store and pick up some more. You know, the problems and what each side sees as being important and, I don't know, having a lot of moral weight or moral baggage or just, you know, life-altering type of stuff or affecting life in general. They're just on such different planes that they can't relate to one another anymore.
But they're still in that analogy works, yes. I will say yes for that one, but it's still like there's still something there in that analogy that you can like work around it. You can read the newspaper, you can watch the news and kind of get a grasp of what's going on and still be informed about stuff. But there's no newspaper for the Annihilation Wave. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can still take interest in what your son's doing and what he went through by reading the newspaper if he's a soldier and came back from Iraq. Whereas this, you can't at all. You can only get that from him. And just when you're at school, you only know what happens at school either from what your kid tells you or when you get a phone call from the teacher saying that he's bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? There's no newsletter every week that they send home about your kid.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I guess you could sort of compare this to the same sort of thing as, say, a son that goes to Iraq and, you know, comes on back. I don't want to compare this really that much to, you know, real-life war situations, but, I mean, like, you know, son goes to Iraq, comes back, you know, experience things that he obviously would not want to talk about with his parents, stuff that he has to keep inside for his sake, and because of that, his parents don't really know how to relate. I guess you could sort of maybe compare that to the way that Nova's parents are reacting to him, that he's been in this war, he's been out in space, but he can't really relate that much to them.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, you get sometimes those people that it's such a culture shock for them to come back from it that the only way that they know how to deal with it, or personally the only way they know how to deal with it, is they have a desire to go back to go back into that environment.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's kind of where they're going with this as well. I don't know.
But here he doesn't really state that he was, you know, in a space war, which I guess we can take and continue on with this conversation. Like, he only says, the father says, oh, you heard about that in outer space, then, it's referring to Civil War. And mm-hmm. Richard says, a little, had a few things of my own to contend with. We picked up a handful of transmissions. Frankly, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Now you're telling me the new warrior started it? He never says, oh, Mom and Dad, I was fighting an alien bug war, like from Starship Troopers, and it was bad. He never really says that, so I guess his father can still see him as, like, running off in space on a little vacation, kind of joyriding in space, rather than him seeing the actual responsibility that his son took, as if he said, you know, Dad, I fought no war, kind of thing.
Well,
so
even Tony's-
I guess that unrelatability that I was talking about was from them still not knowing what the hell went on with their son.
Yeah. Well, even Tony Stark is that way as well, though, because, you know, when he's being debriefed or what have you, you know, Tony Stark, his whole thing was, oh, well, we just thought it was, you know, a couple sides, you know, fighting amongst one another, you know, a border squabble, and that was about it. Now, well, come to find out, it was something way, way, way beyond that. So, you know, even there with Tony Stark, you've got, he has one understanding of what's going on, where Richard Rider has something completely different and is looking at everything, well, you know, why am I going to worry about what's going on down here? Yeah, it did affect my friends, and I'm, you know, torn up about that, but how does the problems of one planet measure up against the responsibilities of the entire universe?
Well, and do you think that will these reactions to what he went through in Annihilation is going to alienate him to leave?
You know? I think so.
They certainly could, yeah.
I think so.
Because it's obvious Tony Stark doesn't care. He didn't tell his parents. So who else is he going to tell that might go, oh my God, what happened?
Maybe, well, even in the first...
Maybe Penance or whatever, Speedball. But he's not the same anymore, you know?
Yeah. Well, even in the first issue... Nova was already, I mean, he was world hopping. You know, his problems, he wasn't going from one state to another or one continent to another. He was going from, you know, one side of the galaxy to the next side, dealing with, you know, distress calls and what have you. And at that point, he was having to make his own decisions on what he thought was right and wrong for the situation. You know, you got the one planet where they said, oh, well, we got this, you know, weapon of mass destruction and we really would like to, you know, put it back where it belongs. And he's like, oh, well, you know, the hell with that. I'm going to blow it up because they're not going to do what needs to be done. I think he probably is eventually going to come to the same conclusion on his own planet.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants me to do this, but you know what? To hell with that. I don't think that's right. I'm going to do what I want to do.
That could certainly be one of the ideas that he comes to. I think also one of the reasons why he didn't tell his parents about, you know, the war and all that is that might have even alienated his parents even farther, because, well, then he'd have to be depressed. He'd have to be really, really down in the dumps, and he'd have to be a completely different person than the one that they had grown to know, perhaps not even be accepted even farther there. But he has gone through these changes of the interplanetary war. He's seen what that can do to multiple planets at the same time. To him, the Civil War might just be nothing more than a skirmish.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be able to ever really get over the fact that he was out in space. Sure, his friends died in the Civil War and all that, but, well, a lot of his friends died in the Annihilation Wave, too. How do you handle both at once? How do you do that? I mean, Brent, how would you handle it?
It just seems silly to me that maybe he's going to hide the war in from his parents and stuff. And still they're going to rack on all this guilt on him about the Civil War when he had nothing to do with it. Like, I would not stay there, or I would not stay at my parents' house and let them pour this guilt on me when I was not here and I was doing something completely different and a lot more honorable than what happened on Earth. I would blurt it out or something, you know. Dad, do you know where I was? I was doing this and this and this and this. I saved billions of lives. How can you pour this guilt on me over 600 or something, you know?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense for, like, as a character, as a person, for him to keep it in and act like nothing's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, people may do that from time to time, but for him to have other people pouring guilt on him and trying to influence his decisions while he's hiding this same thing doesn't make sense.
Yeah. The problem with that, as far as them, you know, pouring out the guilt on him, or you know, vice versa, him, even if he poured out his heart as far as what he went through with the Galactic War, I don't know if his parents would really, I hate to say, I don't know if they would care, because that makes them sound, you know, like they're completely unfeeling and they don't empathize with him at all. But I don't know if they really would care as much as he would want them to, because it didn't affect them directly.
Exactly. You know, they're
worried about what happened in their country. You know, hell, a few states over or what have you is where, you know, you had a bunch of small children or what have you that were killed by his friends, you know, their son's friends, where son comes back, thought he was dead at one point. Oh, no, we didn't really think you were dead. You know, we just thought, you know, you would be okay, or we would hear from you eventually. You fought in a galactic war. Great. Guess what? Your friends, they still killed, you know, over 600 kids. You know, that's what they're concerned with. They're concerned with something that affects them more directly.
It's the typical United States way of thinking about things. And, I mean, even in our actual real-life world, I mean, a lot of the times we focus more on things that happen in our neck of the woods than we do elsewhere. Imagine applying that to a interstellar scale. You know, like, say, for example, how in the news we usually hear about, you know, what's happening in, say, if you live in Florida, you're going to hear about Florida news before you hear about California news. If you live in New York, you're going to hear New York news before you hear about news in Iraq or Florida or anywhere else, because that's your neck of the woods. Now, which would you rather hear about? Would you rather hear about news that's happening in your own country, or would you rather hear about news that's happening on Qui-Gon 7? And, I mean, that's the same way that they got to look at it here, that in their neck of the woods, these problems were occurring. Where was our son? Oh, off dealing with something else in space entirely. Oh, yeah, oh, all those people were saved and all that, but they could have done that without you. We needed you here.
Mm-hmm. They couldn't have done that without him. They wiped out the entire Nova Corps.
Exactly, but, well, if he was on Earth, he would have been safe anyway, wouldn't he?
Would he have been safe, though?
We don't know. We don't know, but neither do his parents. Yeah. His parents seem like the type that would actually have that line of thinking, where, oh, well, had you have just stayed put, then you wouldn't have had any of these problems, and you wouldn't have that thing in your head.
Yeah.
You still have that shitty costume, though.
That much I'll give you. That much
they
I will certainly
show my manly arms.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, was that the only one who had that like Jewish mother voice in their head when the answer to who died, moms? Those new mutants, warriors, for God's sakes, Gloria! They called the new warriors.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, man. But still, that's the type of parents that he has, and I don't think that they would have really accepted the fact that his son was away like that. Mm-hmm. So, at least that's the way I'm thinking about it. Now, looking more towards, you know, like, for instance, later on in the book, when he's just, you know, tooling around town and breaks things up in a fight like he normally would, and then up come the Thunderbolts. You know, like, he didn't think he really did anything wrong here, but when anything wrong happens in the Earth these days, in the United States these days, usually the Thunderbolts are going to be called if it's an unregistered superhero. And at this point, Nova is an unregistered superhero. So how's he going to react to, you know, basically being put down for something he's done so often for most of his life?
Were they called because he's unregistered? Or because I thought one of the policemen here said, oh, we're calling the people to come pick this guy up. That's what I thought the Thunderbolts were called to come pick up Diamond Head.
That's a good question, actually. They don't really make that too clear. I mean,
yeah, they said there's one panel, he's talking to the police guy or something, that says, this isn't our area of specialty, but they called in someone who can deal. And I guess that's the Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's talking about registration papers or Diamond Head. It's not really clear, though.
I took it that they were referring to Diamond Head.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at it more, it looks like it might be Diamond Head, but immediately afterwards, they ask him for his registration papers. So it could be either one at that point, really. You know, I mean, even if they weren't talking about him at that point, well, they certainly would turn to the Thunderbolts and say, oh, yeah, hey, you're here to pick up Diamond Bolt. That's great. That's perfect. He's unregistered. Get him. Get him. Get him. He's right over there. It'll probably turn to that at one point.
Yeah.
I thought they were operating out of Kansas, though.
Who? The Thunderbolts?
The Thunderbolts.
Yeah, well...
Don't they have a state that they're working in or something?
They're working out of what appears to be Cheyenne Mountain. Again, all right? I'm sorry about the Stargate references, all right? But when you look at the new Thunderbolts, they are totally working out of Cheyenne Mountain, all right? It's exactly it. And I think that they're technically supposed to be working in Kansas, but they're all over the place. They're like the Mighty Avengers. They're one of the ones that works in any state that they're called to. If there's a disturbance, if there's, you know, an unregistered human, then they go ahead and deal with that, no matter where it is. At least that's what I found about the Thunderbolts so far. They're not just in Kansas, as it were.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, where do you see the confrontation between the Thunderbolts going? Do you see there being confrontation? Do you see him even realizing that his friend is wearing a spiky suit now?
I see him coming to the realization, maybe, you know, one of those classic, oh, I don't know who you are, you know, get away from me, but then eventually, oh, well, guess what? I'm your friend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You can join us. I have a spare suit in my closet.
We kind of match.
No, but then he'll have to start calling himself Nova. Or he could be Pestilence.
Novocaine.
Novocaine. You will certainly need a lot of that if he puts on that suit.
Oh, oh
wow.
This is why you bring me back time after time.
Novocaine.
Out to defend justice while feeling really good. He's numb to the pain, literally. Boy, but yeah, I mean, do you see there a confrontation happening? Do you see just conversation? What do you expect out of issue 3?
I'm not really expecting. Well, I'm expecting a lot. I'm hoping that he does realize it's his friend under there. But from what you said about pants, it sounds like he's not coming out of the suit. So why would he say, "Hey, it's me, Robbie"?
Well, I mean, he might because he does. He does take the suit off. He just doesn't like taking the suit off.
Yeah.
Okay. He does.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people know, people on the Thunderbolts know he's Speedball. Speedball.
People on the Thunderbolts know, but people in real life don't.
But why would he take the suit off? Wouldn't he have, like, scabs on his face and stuff?
Aren't there
things in his head?
I don't think he did. I mean, Chris, did they put any scabs on his face when we saw him in that issue of New Thunderbolts? I'm trying to remember.
God, I don't think so.
Because I thought that helmet in Frontline had spikes in it.
It does. Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe they didn't just to kind of keep him at least recognizable, just so he's not one mass of goo.
Aren't his spikes like pinpricks, though? I mean, they're not like actual like spikes being drilled into your
body.
That's
not the way they drew it, though. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not the way they drew it on the outside. I don't know whether or not they continue like that on the inside.
But I don't know if pinpricks would be that painful.
Maybe
continuously?
Yeah, continuously, it would sure as hell be painful.
But
it would chase.
If he's trying to make the... Is that why he has his two belts around his thighs?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it produced the kind of pain he needs to use his powers. Well,
he also has a hacksaw inside of it also, so you know he can just drill into an arm if he needs to.
Does it come out of his arm underneath his wrist too?
Yeah, and his arms also turn into guns also. But it's just the 90s waiting to happen. Yeah.
But see, if he does have like his face all scarred and stuff, then I think that would really scare Robbie.
Oh, you're
damn
right.
That'd be
really
interesting reaction to see. Like, what have you done to yourself, man?
Yeah, Richard is not going to react well to Robbie. That much we definitely know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. I mean, it's bad enough when, say, like, for example, if you're out of touch with your best friend for, say, 2 or 3 years or something, and when last you met, he was, you know, an average, you know, normal-looking guy, and then the next time you see him, he's wearing, like, goth makeup and, like, has, like, a nose ring. It would be certainly a shock to your system if that happened, but this is, like, times 20 of that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Times 20.
Or if
20.
Your best friend starts wearing American Eagle. Or Hollister or Abercrombie and Fitch.
Oh, jeez.
2 or 3 years later. That'd be a shock to you.
Roll out the fashion police.
I don't know what you're insinuating, sir, but I mean,
I'm trying not to alienate the listeners, Ian. We only see their forum identities, not their real selves.
That's certainly true.
It's okay to be goth, kids. You're just confused. It's okay.
You're just confused. Hey, I didn't say that there was anything wrong about being goth, all right? I'm just saying if your friend wasn't goth and then you see him 3 or 4 years later and he looks like Marilyn Manson, that's going to be a bit of shock in the system.
Yeah.
I mean, that much you can definitely agree.
What if your friend was a girl 3 or 4 years later?
That would be even more of a shock. If John became Johanna and didn't tell you, well, then, yes, that's going to be a bit of a shock to the system right there.
Oh. I mean, hey, Brent, you know, Ian could be doing this cast in the drag right now. We don't have the webcam going yet, so.
Well, good night, everybody. It's been fun. What's between my legs stays between my legs, all right? Thank you. Oh, my God. Wow.
Not going to go any further.
Yeah, I don't think you want to. Yeah, I don't think I do either. Oh, man. I'm not wearing a tutu right now. All right? I'm not wearing braids. I'm not wearing makeup. Except for possibly a little bit of rouge around my cheeks, because that just makes me look good. But let's go to the forum comments here, as they're nice and quick, as there's only two of them. One of them's nice and simple, so I'll read that one first. It's from Matthew Guy. I know nothing of Nova, so I look forward to this review of 1 and 2 issues to see if this book suits me, and that's Matthew Guy. Well, hopefully through our tomfoolery and our insanity, you enjoy Nova.
I say pick it up.
Yes, exactly. I say pick it up as well. It's certainly worth the read. Nightwing BK had something to say, but I'm not going to read that. We have Just Bill here with his comments. Always nice to see Just Bill. You can find the Just Bill's Comic Drawer Box podcast at www.notexisting.com. So go ahead and check that one out.
Always good to hear from Just Fred.
Exactly. Just John had this to say. I am pleasantly surprised by the first issue. I had misgivings about the character's ability to keep my interest without the supporting cast that was present in Annihilation. But this issue laid that to rest by focusing on Richard Rider and his new dynamic as the sole surviving corpseman. It's Nova Corpse, I guess, not Nova Riders, like we said before. The art suits the book nicely, but something about the shape of the helmet has been bugging me since Annihilation. Huh. I don't know. I'm looking at it now. Yeah, I can sort of see that. It's a bit too spiky. I mean, compared to his old bucket head, I mean, it's a bit sleeker, but you can poke somebody's eye out with that thing on the top of his head.
Maybe that's the idea.
Oh, what? That's supposed to be a weapon?
I don't know. He's a human rocket. Don't you have to have a battering ram?
That's true, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I do like the way it looks, but yeah, the shape is a bit odd, so I'll give him that much. It has lost the bullet look that it originally had. And again, that part, I will agree with, doesn't look like a bullet anymore. Did you like it better as a bullet, or do you like it the way it is now, Chris?
I can kind of see where Just Steve is going with the comments on the helmet and everything. One thing I did notice that maybe addresses that or what have you is I noticed in the second issue that when he takes it off, it seems like it converts back over to like a regular fabric as opposed to it stays like a metal bucket over his head. So I don't know. Again, I don't have much to go on as far as with experience in Annihilation. Maybe it's a little bit more flexible while still retaining or keeping the metallic properties at the same time.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm looking at it at that right now. When he took off his helmet, it comes off like it's felt, like it's fabric. Yeah. That's really weird. I don't know whether or not that's just...
The Sandarians must have seen Batman Begins.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure whether or not that's just, you know, the fact that, you know, what he's wearing is alien substance that's able to do things like that, but it kind of doesn't exactly fit with it, because he used to have to hold his helmet in his hands. I remember that. Maybe this is just an advancement? I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe it's the same fabric they've been making Wolverine's face mask from all these years.
It's true, actually. Yeah, that's always bugged me, so it's certainly possible. All right. Being an old-school reader, I guess nostalgia is causing me to resist the change, albeit only slightly. The rest of the uniform slash costume is pretty badass. I'm looking forward to seeing the powered-up Nova take on Iron Man and the rest of the Marvel Universe fascists next issue. So to sum up, issue one was a great start to the series, and the writing and art both have me interested in sticking with the title to see where it goes. Another monthly book added to my reading list, and that is Just Miguel. Just to let you guys know about that. So,
yeah, just Francois.
Francois. Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure we're pretty much in the same camp he is, that we're going to keep picking it up. But this is sort of a book that Marvel Comics has really needed, too, because, well, we haven't had a space book, a true space book in Marvel Comics since, I guess since Silver Surfer got canceled years ago.
Yeah.
And this is the first real ongoing title that we have that involves space. I mean, are you looking forward to seeing more of the space heroes possibly coming back and getting their own books, their own regular books, if Nova succeeds?
I do. I mean, to be honest, I picked up the first issue, you know, based off of your recommend. Previously, it wasn't even on my radar, but now I have it on my pull list, so I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. Honestly, I think that, let's say, even like Sean Chen, if he were to leave the book, he was a big draw for me for the book. But so far, I've enjoyed the writing. So I think even if Sean Chen were to leave, I think I would probably still continue picking the book up, especially while, was it Abnett and Lanning are still writing.
Have you read any Abnett before, by the way?
You know what? Honestly, I've picked up so many books over the years. I probably have, although I couldn't tell you offhand without looking at ComicDB what stuff that they have worked on.
Because I'm seeing here that he at least his Marvel work includes runs on Death's Head 2. I guess I don't really know much about Death's Head, so I can't really tell you much about that. Battle Tide, Knights of Pendragon, which he co-created, The Punisher, War Machine. How about that? War Machine. Haven't heard of that in a while. Annihilation Nova. Oh, so he actually wrote Annihilation Nova. Okay, so that's...
Now, is it, aren't they is it co-writers? Is it Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning? Let me look.
Isn't Andy Lanning, like, Phil Jimenez is inker or something? I think he's an inker, too.
Yeah, Abnett and Lanning are indeed co-writing this, yes.
Okay.
Actually, if I remember correctly, I could be wrong on this, but didn't they write Legion of Superheroes for a while?
Did they write was it the 5 years later?
Site.
Oh man, I gotta look it up.
That's exactly what I'm doing right now. Actually, I want to definitely take a look at this. Let's see. Abnett and Lanning.
There it goes.
Abnett and Lanning. Oh, okay. They're the Legion Lost guys.
Oh, see, now I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I did enjoy that.
Yeah, and actually, if I remember correctly, they wrote it until the relaunch, actually. The relaunch when Mark Waid actually relaunched Legion. They were on it that long, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
So, I mean, they've dealt with space stuff before, so this is not foreign for them at all.
Very good.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean...
So maybe that tells us where their books is going, though.
What, that he'll get a flight ring and start, you know, a new...
No, I mean, that'll be space-oriented.
Oh, okay, all right.
Darn.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah, a little bit. I'll agree with that, but... The fact that also that he wrote an entire Legion book before, you know, with Lanning, says that it's very possible we could get Nova Corps and have it be really awesome.
Yeah,
so... All right, I guess all in all, our thoughts that this is definitely really good and that we want to see it continue. I guess, say, are you picking this up anywhere past, say, issue 6? Are you just giving it like a 6-issue trial run, or are you definitely on for the long haul? We'll start with you, Chris.
I'm probably going to be in it for the long haul. You know, I definitely am going to keep an eye on previews as far as the team that's working on the book. If the current team comes off or changes... If the art team changes, I'd probably be less likely to stop picking it up. I'll probably continue. If the writers change on it, that probably maybe pick up a couple issues into the new team and see how that goes, and then make a decision whether or not to keep it. But as long as the current writing team's on it, I'll probably continue picking up the book.
Same for you, Brad?
No, actually different. I'm going to get issue 3 and see if that closes off this little storyline. with him registering and stuff. And if it does, then maybe I'll look at issue 4 in the store and think about it. If it doesn't, then I might get issue 4. I just can't see myself going past number 3 on this.
Really?
Just can't see it. Yeah. I mean, it's a good book, but I can't see it justifying my time because I'm not involved in Annihilation or the Marvel Space characters at all.
Well, I mean, don't you think this could be a gateway for you, though? I mean, like, if you do enjoy this enough, then perhaps you'd be, you know, wanting to learn more about him?
Perhaps, but I'm already so, like, involved and entrenched in the DC stuff. Like, Green Lantern is my favorite book, and Blue Beetle's becoming a space character now, and they're doing so much with that over there that it just, I don't know, I don't think it could match up with it.
By the way, do you know how much longer Daniel Acuna is going to be on the book for Green Lantern?
20 came out today, and it's his last issue.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure. Because, again, I
think they put him on so that Ivan Reis could do the Sinestro Corps issues.
Good. Okay. All right. Okay. I just wanted to know because, again, I'm a Daniel Acuna fan. I've said this on the last couple episodes. I own a Daniel Acuna sketch of Superman, so it's hard for me to say I'm not a fan of Daniel Acuna. I just really didn't like his Green Lantern stuff. It happens. Well,
there are some pages in this issue where I really didn't like it at all either.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
You know who I prefer? Kind of probably getting off topic. The person I would have preferred to see do the fill-in for it. If you go on Comic Sketch Gallery or Comic Book DB, Anthony Castrillo.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Paco Diaz.
Paco Diaz.
He did the Nightwing run with Bruce Jones. Don't really want to mention that. He also did the last issue of Nightwing that was currently out for a fill-in for Jamal Igel. Mm-hmm. And he's done some fill-ins on Ion and Teen Titans. And he's doing some really quality stuff. That last Nightwing issue that just came out, 124 or something, blew me away. It was awesome.
Well, you could have even gotten somebody like a Jesus Reyes, who's at the moment not doing Checkmate like he was. Bennett's
doing Countdown now.
Oh, he is doing Countdown now. Okay.
I think he's going to try and do one issue of Countdown a month.
I gotcha.
That's going to happen, but...
Okay. All right, cool. Well, all right. Well, anyway, I'll just be jumping back on Green Lantern once the Sinestro arc starts. Just for now, I couldn't pick those up. So that's just the way I'm feeling about it. But anyway, that's completely off topic. So for me, Nova, I'd say it's pretty much long haul. I mean, there'd have to be a serious change in the way it's being written and a serious way in the way it's been drawn for me to go elsewhere. Because it feels like an old-fashioned book for me. It's got that new style, but it's got that old feel. And it's what I've been looking for in a Marvel book for a while, so I'm definitely on. Yeah. So,
One thing I would hate for it to happen with the book is, you know, a lot of times it will happen as far as with books, if sales are down or you bring a new creative team in, you know, they kind of try to change the, I don't know what you call it, the New World Order or what have you on a title. I would hate to see a change where they kind of move away from Nova being part of, you know, the galactic scene and bring him down to Earth.
Yeah.
You know, for a long period of time or for the long haul. If you're going to make any changes, you know, add additional characters, you know, scenarios, what have you, but still keep him involved with the Marvel universe, you know, the greater or the larger Marvel universe instead of just everything back down here on planet Earth.
Well, I could even see if perhaps he does reestablish the Nova Corps, putting an agent on Earth. You know, have him going back to be, you know, the leader of the Nova Corps and have somebody on Earth that he can trust, you know, defending Earth from invasion, as it were. I can see that, but, you know, that's way, 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 way down the line. You know, I mean, for now, I definitely want things to stay the way they are. That's the way I'll put that. Yeah, I mean, we talked a good solid, like, hour and 45 minutes to hour and 50 minutes about two books of comics, so I think we've officially done the Raging Bullet style, so... Yay.
Did you guys like the translator in issue number 1? I forgot to ask that.
Oh, yeah. No, that was really cool. I did enjoy that. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I didn't really like it the first time around, but the second time I thought it was really cool.
Well, I liked when he got like back home and he was on
auto-translate. Expression for many lifetimes, guttural shriek of abject terror. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, well,
needs to be translated.
Well, hey, even a universal translator can mess up sometimes.
Before we wrap this episode up, we just got a post on the forums that I want to actually address here, and it's from Jacoby. What are fans of Comic Timing called? Now, I want to make this clear here, okay? I want us to decide here on the show what the hell they're going to be called. He suggests that we're called As It Were's, probably because of how often I say the words As It Were.
As It Were?
Yes. I know that that's one of my speech patterns. I know that I say As It Were way too often. But he suggests that it's As It Were's, and he said, okay, wasn't that funny, or funny at all. But, yeah, what the hell do you call fans of Comic Timing? I've been thinking about that. Perhaps about timekeepers?
That's not bad.
Comic timers?
Nah, comic timers, I don't know. That doesn't really roll off the tongue too much.
Comic two timers.
Oh, yeah. Comic two timers.
Itchers and complainers.
Oh. Yeah. How about the putting up withers?
We want a solid co-hosters.
Oh. The Brent Cassina fan clubbers. Yeah, that's I don't know if that's really going to work for me here, buddy. I don't know about you, but yeah, I mean, what do you guys think about timekeepers?
I like it. It works.
I'm not feeling it.
You're not feeling it?
Let's wait another week and sit on it.
Well, what are you feeling then?
Not timekeeper. I think you need a comic something in there first. Or some C word. I don't know.
Crap.
You can't beat the CNI
well, crap,
dogs.
Crap
though.
Get used all the time.
Yeah, the crap takers. How about that?
Yeah,
the crap takers.
Yeah, or the crap listeners. What about they listen to us?
Crap
so.
Keepers.
Oh, crap keepers.
Oh, shit. Why do I get an image of somebody walking around with one of those bags they always put on a horse's ass in Central Park or what have you?
Oh, I know. The Geeks Unite podcast. That's the fans of Comic Timing right there.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
And Equinox.
And you can find us at geeksunite.libsyn.com. Yeah, that's right. In and around comics. Let's not start that again. How about this? All right, I'm gonna start a thread up on the forums. Okay, all right. I want people to make suggestions, and then we're gonna have a vote. All right, we'll find out what the hell you want to call yourselves if you're a fan of Comic Timing. All right, so go ahead and think about it for a while. I'll start the thread up. Go with what you like the most. All right, make suggestions, do whatever you want, and thanks for suggesting us even talking about this, Jacoby, because I haven't really thought of that much. I didn't think that there were anybody out there other than me and my hand actually talking and listening on the show. Thank you very much. My hand has ears.
Is that your Bluetooth headset?
Yes, actually. My Bluetooth headset that I talk while in the middle of the street, I go, "That's crazy! What are you talking about?" Swear to God, there was one time, all right, I'm walking down the street in Manhattan, all right, and I had just gotten out of the train at 42nd Street, and there's this guy, all right, who's laughing hysterically, all right, and talking back to what appeared to be, like, the middle of the air, like, oh, that's crazy, that's absolutely crazy. Oh, yeah. No, don't say that. And I didn't notice his Bluetooth headset until I already started running away.
Oh, shit.
You live in a fucked up world, Ian.
Uh-huh. Yes, indeedy. But let's wrap.
Big enough city to see it all. You see it all.
Uh-huh. Let's wrap this baby up here. Now I know, Chris, that you're not you don't have your own podcast yet. You don't do anything like that. But go ahead and recommend something to the people.
Matthew Guy. Everybody needs to talk to Matthew Guy at least once.
Okay. Good. So
and just Robert. Just Robert.
Just Robert.
Go visit his long box of something. .com.
Yes, well, Just Julio is a terrific member of the forums, and yes. I want to thank him definitely for participating. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Brent, you got anything coming up on the Raging Bullets?
I just did Smallville season finale on Raging Bullets. That should be out Thursday night, or tonight. So yeah, by the time you guys get this, it'll be long out. And then Sean from Raging Bullets, Jim from Raging Bullets, Juan from Geeks Unite, and Raph and I, last Thursday, while you guys were doing something else, had a Geeks Unite episode X or something.
Oh, wow.
God knows when that was come out, but it's full of tangents and non sequiturs and making fun of Raph because he was supposed to join us at like 10:30 and he didn't show up until 11:30. So we made fun of him for like an hour and a half.
Well, you see, he was on Central Time. That's all.
It was great. Yeah, it was great.
I definitely need to listen to this episode. Not much I can say. Oh, there are some things that I want to plug here, actually. I didn't realize this until, like, way after it was actually released, but there's an episode of Comic Book Noise, episode 75, that actually had a quick summary of Comic Timing on there with a little bit of a, like, a very short promo for it on there from the episode on Wizard Magazine that he played on it at one point. So go ahead and check out Comic Book Noise, episode 75, for that. And also, there was one other thing that I wanted to mention, and now it's completely out of my head. And, oh yeah, Geeks Unite. I was on Geeks Unite a while back talking about anime, so go ahead and check that out also. And yeah, that's pretty much it. So I'll end this with one final quote, balls in a sling. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum. which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page, and also a whole listing of Podcast Alley sites on the Comic Timing forums. And please send us an iTunes review on iTunes. Graciously appreciated. Send nice press to the show. Go ahead over to dig.com and dig us if you please. There's a whole listing on the Comic Timing forums as well. Once again, Chris, thanks for joining us after a while. And anytime you want back, you know you're more than welcome, buddy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me around.
No problemo. And Brent, you're welcome as always. Mr. Co-host, not co-host, co-host.
Not a co-host, but a co-host, but not a co-host. What do you say?
You're a co-host, but you're not a co-host, but you're a co-host. You're pretty much named a co-host at this point whenever you show up. But, great having you on as always, buddy.
Thanks, bud.
All right, cool. And as always, there's always time for comics. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I thought I was, you know, an expert at the ball massaging, but, you know, apparently I can still learn.
I am very much, much missing out on an inside joke here, so please fill me in.
No, in one of his PMs, like last week when he said he couldn't do it, he said he can't go or his wife would have his balls in a sling.
Oh.
And I said that expression's really fucking cool.
Well, now that just reminds you about something, okay? Whatever you do, keep the slings away from the wife at all costs.
And there you go.
This is a superhero called Nova. You know, he just went through a major part of his life. You know, now he's dealing with it and Brent's in shit.
Hello?
So, yeah. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Fuck, sorry. I just got this thing on the bottom of Skype that said, Skype cannot hear you talking. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's going to do that whenever, like, you don't talk for, like, 8 seconds. So.
Oh, sorry. I hope I didn't ruin that.
No, don't worry about it. I'm just going to say that part again anyway, just so we get it. Because I think halfway through I heard a shit. I'm like, uh-oh.
Well, because I was reading it and then sorry.
Don't worry, it's okay.
Heavy breathing and sniffling will keep it active.
Exactly. So just wheeze every now and then, so, but it'll be fun. Like, I'll be talking all here in the background. Do you feel that the world might have ulterior modems? Ulterior modems. Wow. Do you feel that the world mind is trying to connect to Richard Rider's DSL while he's not around?
So they're not evil, they're just misunderstood.
Exactly.
Just like penance.
It hurts so good.
Poor bastard.
I love feeling spikes through my balls.
He's got his balls in a sling.
Are you dense? Are you retarded? I'm the goddamn penance.
Do you think for punishment he has like an iPod in his head and it plays like whatever his least favorite music is?
Barbara Streisand on loop.
There you go.
And I did it my way.
Some smooth old soul or something. Like smooth jazz elevator music.
That would just put him to sleep. I mean, that wouldn't really, you know, cause him that much pain. I think what he has to listen to is...
What about,
nothing
like,
but
Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera?
Nothing but Britney Spears and Old Dirty Bastard.
Oh. I just lost a listener there.
Yes.
Not me, but some others.
All right. Well, okay, fine. If anything, then, just the cover that ODB did with Macy Gray of that Elton John song, that was terrible.
Okay, yeah. He probably has Macy Gray on loop.
There you go. All right, fine. I wonder if this is going to go back in the back of the episode, because, I mean, this is just absolutely nothing to do with anything at this point. I don't even remember what the hell my name is anymore. Oh, yeah.
Trevor.
Oh, I forgot about Trevor.
I hated that episode, but I still remember it.
Whatever you say, Trevor. All right.
Français.
Oui. Wow, I don't know where the hell my head is today.